The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Teacher shortages, unfinished school buildings, a lack of places. Education in Ireland clearly has its issues at the moment. So what is being done to improve things? Well, Norma Foley, the Minister for Education, who will be speaking at this weekend's Fianna Fáil Ordesh, joins me now. Minister, good morning.
Good morning, Pat.
You have your hands full.
Well, I think that's the nature of the job. I think we've made considerable progress in many areas. We've done a lot in the last 4 years. But as always, there, you know, remains work to be done.
Now, it is the Fianna Fáil Ordesh, the last one before the next general election. So this is a pre-election Ordesh. And every minister will be laying out their stall as to what might be accomplished that then will form part of an election manifesto, I suppose. So let's go through some of the things that, you've been working on. School books. We've had some caveats from principals saying it is too cumbersome to organise and we're not sure we'll have it done for the autumn.
Well, look, I was very clear from the outset. I absolutely believe in the importance of, you know, opportunity and access to education. So we very successfully rolled out the free school books at primary level. And I want to acknowledge that was done largely, of course, with support from the department, but largely it was done by the great work of schools on the ground and principals and school leadership. And to facilitate the rollout of that free school books, we provided additional resources into schools. And we've given a commitment that we will provide the exact, you know, level and types of resources at post-primary also. So that will mean, for example, that we will provide an additional 10 days or 13 days or 16 days to schools, depending on their size, so that they will be in a position for somebody within the choosing, if you like, of the Board of Management to take responsibility for the rollout of the school books. It's hugely, hugely important to families.
No, but they're talking about the nature of having to go to try to tender for these and just the bureaucracy surrounding it. And booksellers, of course, are also concerned that they have depended on school children and their parents coming in to buy books, and they may be sourced centrally by the principals and put them out of business.
Well, again, just on that last point, we have been really, really clear, and I've been very clear from the outset, that schools already have existing relationships with the local bookshop or whatever. And the vast majority of our schools engaged in book rental schemes, so they already have an excellent working relationship with the local school bookshop. So they are fully entitled and free to continue that relationship with the local bookshop. And we were very clear to ensure that that accommodation would be made for them.
Even if it doesn't mean the best price.
Well, again, you know, the funding will be provided to the schools. The schools will make their own adjudication. But I want to be fair and say they've already operated the book rental scheme under, you know, circumstances quite similar in terms of the, you know, whatever monies they're getting. And they know what it is to operate. And the vast majority of them have operated those with the local bookstore. So I don't see, you know, as I say, the opportunity is there. In terms of additional supports, as I've said, we're making additional days, whether it's 10, 13 or 16 days. We're also very clear, and we're saying to them in terms of the procurement aspect, because look, I do accept, I've been very clear that obviously anything new that we would bring in will be an additional challenge, so we're making the days available, but we're also saying that we're making particular staff available within the department to support any issues that schools might have on the ground. We're doing that from our own procurement section. We're ensuring that additional staffing has gone into that section. We will have...
All right. So in summary, on this particular one, no excuses from the principals come the autumn.
Well, look, I want to be fair. You know, any change or anything new that is required in a school does bring with it, you know, a degree of challenge. But we are doing all that we can to minimise that challenge, to provide the necessary support from the department and indeed the resource directly.
Okay, but basically you're saying you're doing everything that is required. Therefore, no excuses from principals if they don't have the scheme going in the autumn. I mean, that is the bottom line, isn't it? Because parents would be very annoyed if school A has all of this in place and school B does not.
Well, again, just to say, I think we can very honestly point to the manner in which it was rolled out at primary schools, the successful manner in which it was rolled out, the supports that were provided by the department, and have given the absolute commitment that we would provide those resources also to the principals.
Okay.
I don't underestimate the level of work that, you know, the principals do every single day, but I do want to acknowledge as well that they have provided great, you know, great initiative in their own right too, and they're very willing to work with something that will be of enormous benefit to families from a cost point of view.
Another benefit to many families is the school transport scheme. Now, currently 161,600 children benefit from the scheme. The rules are you can apply under all the usual caveats if in primary school you live farther away from the school of 3.2 kilometres, in secondary school 4.8 kilometres. Presumably the secondary school kids are more able-bodied, active transport, safer for them perhaps. But anyway, you're going to reduce those kilometres so kids living nearer their schools might apply. How many extra children are likely to qualify and where are the buses going to come from?
Well, it is a very ambitious plan in terms of school transport, and you're quite correctly pointing out that it is a very positive thing that we have 161,000 young people already availing of the system. I come from a rural constituency myself. I know the value and the importance of the school transport system. So our target is an ambitious one of 100,000 additional students by 2030. To facilitate that, we'll be rolling out a number of pilots in September. That will be specifically, as you have said there, looking at the reduced distance, but also looking at the opportunity to amalgamate, if you like, where there can be public transport and the school transport system. That obviously would just be for post-primary students, because children under 12 cannot travel on the public transport system unaccompanied. So we're looking at that type of a pilot. We're also looking
What would that be? Just to explain, that would involve the kid having a pass that would enable them to get on public transport and get to school.
Yeah, we're currently looking at rolling out that pilot where we have an opportunity where there is public transport already in existence, and where that might be able to, I suppose, accommodate a child or a young person who needs to attend school. So I suppose that there would be an amalgamation of, and not a duplication of, resources that are already in existence. So that's one type of pilot. The other is, you know, this notion of 3.2 kilometres or 4.8 kilometres, attending your nearest or at post-primary, your next nearest school. There are lots of families that have caused them difficulties. So we are ultimately looking at where there will be a situation where the necessity to attend your nearest or next nearest school will no longer be in existence, and really there will be the freedom of choice as regards the school that you wish to go to, and that the distance would eventually be evaporated. I think it's very positive from a climate point of view. It's very positive from an accessibility point of view for parents and children. So it's a real positive. It's ambitious, but it's a worthwhile project.
And I think it makes a lot of sense. So many cars pulling up at the school gates. If those numbers could be reduced, all sorts of benefits will flow therefrom. School buildings,
absolutely.
I mean, there's an ambitious program that's been underway since 2020. I mean, 800 school building projects. They could be very small ones or significant ones have been completed. Further 300 could be an extension, could be a new library building, whatever it might be. But in terms of brand new schools, where are we? Because one of the schools that got the most publicity was the school in Navan, the Convent of Mercy in Navan, which has been lying incomplete and kind of stalled for quite a long time.
Yeah, indeed. Look, as you very articulately pointed out, we have a very ambitious programme of school buildings. We have over 1.2 billion year on year now being expended on these projects, and some of them are brand new builds, some of them are extensions, and particularly to accommodate maybe even in the area of special education. So different schools are at different points in the process. Yesterday or just the previous day, I announced an €800 million advancement of projects, which will allow for 90 projects to go to construction. That's in addition to the 300 that are currently on the ground. And then, as I said, other projects will come on stream over the coming months as well. So,
but what do you do about projects like that particular one I mentioned? How can you streamline the process so these things don't happen, where, you know, a builder stops work for whatever reason and it's stalled, and then huge amounts of money have to be paid for just maintaining the site and securing it and all the rest of it, and then really the next person coming in that's got to be tendered for as well. You know, there's something flawed about that process.
Yeah, well, and that is the exception, Pat, rather than the norm. And I think we should be very clear about that. There was a very definite issue in that particular case where there was difficulties with the contractor. The contract was terminated, so there was an ongoing saga of bringing somebody new on board, and all of that. But that's not the norm within the system. That, in actual fact, is a considerable exception. And I think we can point to the enormous number of new builds, the enormous number of additional accommodations that have been provided for over the last 4 years. It's been quite significant. And I think that we can point to, you know, over 1.2 billion being expended every single year on school buildings.
Yeah. I mean, that is good news. But in terms of a manifesto, it might look good, but the lived experience of people is often what counts. What about those parents
who can't? There, Pat.
I'm just saying, what about parents who can't get a school place for their kids? I mean,
again,
that is the most dispiriting. I mean, that was never a problem in Ireland, and it seems to be a problem now.
Well, just on that one, I visit schools the length and breadth of the country, and whether it's the opening of extensions or brand new school builds or special schools, there has been extraordinary development, unprecedented development in the last 4 years. There has also been an unprecedented increase in the number of pupils that we have in the system, and we have particular growth areas in particular places. And notwithstanding that, we are meeting the challenge. In terms of school places and availability of school places, and we've been particularly challenged in some areas greater than in others. We have given an absolute commitment that those places will be put in place, whether it was the requirement for a modular build or whatever. Just to say, in terms of parents, and I don't underestimate you know, the stress for parents at any given time, but we do have a system where our boards of management do have individual application processes, and that's something that we need to look at, in that, you know, parents, and as is their right, they apply to a number of schools, so we do have you know, duplication of the process. That's just one aspect. I'm not saying at all that that's the singular reason.
But you can't blame them for having a go, because, you know, if they get on three lists, they might make it to the top of one. One of the stats, which is quite stark, almost half of the 40 school planning areas are recorded. This is in Dublin, where all schools are oversubscribed. Almost half of the schools, and we're talking about Dunleary, Dublin 6 West, Castleknock, Booterstown Blackrock, Blanchardstown West, Blanchardstown Village, Rathfarnham, Rush and Lusk, Skerry's Swords, Whitehall Santry, Malahide, Nevanstown, Palmerstown, Runnanstown. I mean, that's a long list of places where schools are oversubscribed, where parents must be tearing their hair out coming up to September.
But again, I'm going to say to you, Pat, in relation to those, and in many of those areas, there has already been school extensions, or there have been new school bills, or whatever the case might be. But what I can say to you is that once the application process has been completed by a school, we've asked schools to share the data and work with the department, and we are currently doing that. And we're working through each one, and I want to acknowledge how magnanimous schools on the ground are, because they have agreed then to take on additional classes or make space for additional classes, and the department then provides the resources to do that. So, you know, individually, piece by piece, we go through each requirement in each sector, wherever it happens to be, and we do come to the conclusion.
But
certainly there is stress at one point.
It's hard to magic up buildings, you know,
coming in.
It is hard to magic up buildings quickly.
Absolutely, and that's why we have looked to a variety of different resources, whether it's modular build, which has been hugely successful for us in the last number of years. We've had, you know, an influx of students, you know, for example, 18,000 additional students coming on stream from Ukraine. We have seen students come from the IPAS system. We have seen an increase in population. So, you know, a number of factors will arise at any given time due to the, I suppose, the fact that we live in a society that's in a constant state of flux, and we have to be prepared for the unexpected. So therefore, we do have the forward planning unit within the department. But there are some eventualities that you can't, I suppose, prepare for, in terms of, you know, I suppose what's happened in terms of, you know, worldwide and the influx of additional students.
We
have worked through each individual case that's required for each school, and the places are being put in place in time for September of 24.
I have a lot of comments from our listeners, but I want to deal with one further area, and that is the teacher shortage and the question of whether or not the rules for leave of absence should be changed. Now, I'm not one of the people who say, look, Minister, you yourself are on leave of absence. You are doing the state some service in your job at the moment. So I'm going to park that one. But for people who just, you know, heading off to the Middle East to make some quick money, two ideas came out. One is that we should lure them back with some city allowances to get them to teach in the cities. Another is they get credit for their service overseas when they come back in terms of increments and so on. What do you say to those proposals? First of all, to limit the ability of teachers to head off when they've already secured a permanent job and then leave someone in that job holding it warm for them, but unable to get a permanent job themselves. That's the first thing. And then the whole question of incentives to get them back. 4,800 or 600 primary teachers overseas, a shortage of 2,000 in the country. Something's got to be done.
Look, I suppose just in relation to the general there, you know, people at various times, for a variety of different reasons, choose to go abroad. That has always been the case. I would also say, in terms of people taking up career breaks or whatever, there can be a variety of different circumstances. You know, people choose to take up those breaks also for family reasons, say, whatever the circumstance might be.
But surely it should be limited in time. I mean, you'd imagine...
It is limited in time.
What's the limit?
It is limited in time. There's a 5-year
exactly.
Limit.
Exactly. Now, can you imagine any other profession in the country? I mean, if I walked out of this job for 5 years and expected to get it back, I'd be told to whistle. Do you know what I mean? The idea that someone can actually go off, try something else. If it works, they'll never come back, even though they're trained to do the job. If it doesn't work, then they trundle back and expect the same job. I'm not sure that makes any sense to anybody.
Well, again, just in the general principle of that, as I said, some people may have very particular and individual circumstances to do with family, to do with care within family, or whatever the case might be. That's number one. Secondly, I will also say that there has always been a view in education that the widest breadth of experience that you bring to a classroom benefits enormously the students that you teach.
Well, therefore, they should get credit, should they not, therefore, for their overseas services teachers and get the increments.
And again, just to go to that point, just want to be very clear that teachers who do teach abroad, whether we say it's in the EU or the UK, they are their service is fully recognised on their return. The issue, and at primary level, if they're in a non-EU country, it is recognised. But there is an issue at post-primary, which is currently, and this is for private schools in non-EU countries, in terms of recognition of service. That is a matter for the Teacher Conciliation Council. It will be worked through there, and it will ultimately be a budgetary consideration. So I have been very clear, nothing is off the table. We're prepared to look at, you know, to look at everything. I think we should also recognise that we have 75,000 teachers currently in the system who are actually working in school at this point as we speak this morning. And just in terms of, you know, additional money to be made available, I just want to acknowledge, you know, that the new pay deal ensures that, we say, a teacher who will in the next while be starting out in their career, they will begin on a pay scale of €46,000, rising to €85,000. So significant progress has been made there as well over the last number of years under the pay deals.
Yeah. Now, you rule nothing out. What about that urban allowance, shall we say?
Well, again, just to point, as I say, significant progress has been made, as I've just said there, under the pay deals. So going from 46,000
But that's for everybody. Everybody gets it. Do you know what I mean?
Indeed it is.
Whereas the people in the urban areas are paying far more in rent or housing, whatever, more expensive than maybe someone living in a relatively small town with a substantial school. You know, it is tough.
But again, just in relation to that, I think we'd have to be fair and say that you know, any initiative of that nature that were to be brought in could not be restricted just to those who are in the teaching profession or working in the education area. It would have to be open to others in the public sector as well. So that's something that needs to be taken into consideration. And equally so, people reference this consistently around, you know, the London allowance and an additional allowance being given in London, and that's where it has come from. But again, to point to the fact that, you know, the London allowance that's provided in London is the starting pay salary in Ireland actually meets that in terms of the London allowance. So, look, it's not as simple as it appears. It would have ramifications across the public sector, and I think that's only right. So there would be quite a body of work needed to be done there in terms of the obligation right across the public sector.
Now, I'll just give you a sample of the text coming in. Why have principals to buy books? The government has agreed to free books. The Department of Education should be buying all the books in bulk and delivering them to all schools. Aren't they using the same books across all schools? And if not, why not? That's from Alina. All children should have access to the free books. It should not be right that children who have no access to non-fee paying schools and therefore have to pay fees are further penalised by a lack of free books that are available to other children. We sold our house in Cavan and bought a house in Manor Hamilton and Leitrim because funding had been approved for an ASD unit to open in September. Our four-year-old son has autism. We uprooted our lives to get this place for him. We got a call a few weeks ago to say the funding has been pulled and he has nowhere else to go. Inclusion and education, pure nonsense. Informed yesterday that my children's school has been denied the building of a new classroom for special needs in Brook Lodge in Glanmire in Cork. An absolute disgrace. The government spent 27 million on a referendum but doesn't have the money for a classroom. That's Paul in Cork. Please ask the minister if this year's Leaving Cert students will get the same accommodations that the class of 22 and 23 got. This year's Leaving Cert students never sat a junior set and were highly impacted by COVID. Now, there are many more questions. So just giving you a sense of how exercised our listeners are about all of this.
Oh, and absolutely, and rightly so. I think we have, a population of 1 million children in the education system. So we have a huge investment by parents and guardians, and indeed, I would say extended families, and that's very positive. But just in terms of some of the points that have been raised there in terms of special education, I want to be 100% clear in terms of the commitment that we have to special education. More than 27% of the entire budget of the department is now expended on special education, and rightly so. We've had presently 3,000 special classes in place. We've had 7 new special schools under this government, and 2/3 of the 3,000 classes have been provided under this government, and 4 new special schools will also be opened in September. Specifically in relation to the places that have been mentioned there, I want to be very clear. If it's a thing that a project isn't going ahead in a particular area, it's because there are places available somewhere else in the area. I can't comment specifically on in relation to the two that you have mentioned there, but I can be very clear and say where the places are required, they're being put in place. I think it's quite phenomenal to say that we have more than 40,000 professionals now also working in the area of special education, something we've never, ever had before. I don't for 1 minute say that we're completed in that work. We've more to do, but enormous progress has been made. In terms of the books and
buying
the
them
availability
centrally
of the books. Yeah, indeed. Schools do have the autonomy to choose the, there's a curriculum laid down, but schools do have the autonomy to choose the type of book that will instruct in the curriculum. And I think that's important too, because, staff know their students best, they know their interests best, they know the type of material that will suit them best. So that autonomy exists within the schools. And in terms of the fee-paying schools, I want to be very clear, the department does already invest, considerable money in millions in terms of staffing of the fee-paying schools. That's already been provided for. So there is a strong commitment.
The point was really about people who have no choice but to send their kids to a fee-paying school. Minister, I'd just ask you to get your officials to listen to some of the other comments we have on the programme. I know you're busy. The Ardèche is looming. But I thank you very much for your time. That's Norma Foley, the Minister for Education.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.